Informed Dissent, the intersection of healthcare and politics, with Dr. Jeff Barkey, board-certified primary care physician, and Dr. Mark McDonald, board-certified child, adolescent, and adult psychiatrist.
All right, Mark, welcome back to another great episode of Informed Dissent.
Hi, Jeff. We are going to be pursuing a local legend here out of our famous or perhaps infamous Chapman, formerly of Chapman University.
Yeah, not just a local legend, I think arguably a courageous hero when you hear his story, and that is Professor John Eastman. Now, for those of you that don't know, Professor Eastman was a professor of law at Chapman University, constitutional lawyer. He was also dean of the law school for many, many years, and he got well known doing a lot of things, but over the Trump presidency and towards the end of the Trump presidency, he was an advisor to President Trump and now is being criminally prosecuted and they're trying to take his license away for exercising his right as an attorney to give President Trump legal advice. So Professor Eastman, welcome to Informed Dissent.
Thank you, Jeffrey. And thank you, Mark. It's nice being on with both of you.
Yeah. And by the way, this is audio, of course. We can see each other because it's just easier to have a conversation. So we're using a Zoom-like format as we record this. And what the audience can't see is Mark and I both have t-shirts on that say, Free John Eastman. A patient of mine made me these shirts. And we came up with this idea. I won't reveal his name, Mark, because I don't want to get him in trouble. But Mark and I know a professor at Chapman University, and we were having dinner with him and his wife not long ago, and we were talking about the infamous Professor Eastman, and we wanted to go and audit his class. He's a professor. I won't tell you what department either, but Mark and I were going to go on campus and audit his class just for fun, to sit in, watch him lecture. He's supposed to be a great lecturer and so forth. And I said, you know what, Mark, what we ought to do is we ought to go on campus, record a video, and wear a Free John Eastman shirt. So a patient of mine made these shirts for us. We haven't been on campus yet because, you know, it was during break, I think, over Christmas, and we're going to have to coordinate with him when he's actually teaching. But we're going to go on campus, walk around wearing these shirts, and we'll record a live video to see what the reaction is from the students who may or may not even know who you are. And certainly the professors will wander over to the law school and see if we can get a reaction from some of the professors over there.
Well, that'll be fun. I hope you get it all on videotape because I'll bet you get a range of reactions.
Absolutely. So, John, tell us about what's going on with you. Obviously, it's really quite unbelievable in the United States of America that a person of your stature is being accused of all kinds of things, and they're trying to take your law license away for exercising your right as an attorney and as a citizen to give guidance to a sitting president.
Well, and you know, some of the charges against me are that I made false statements when I gave a speech. The statements weren't false, but even if they were, it's still protected speech. That I made false statements in an article I published, that I made false statements on Steve Bannon's webcast, The War Room, and that by attaching other people's complaints to one of my lawsuits, they're attributing what they claim to be a false statement in that case to me because I referenced it in my brief. More troubling, though, the first charge against me is that I did not uphold my oath of office to uphold and support the Constitution of the United States. Anybody that knows me knows how preposterous that is. My whole career has been defending the Constitution as originally written, and doing it in litigation, doing it in speeches and educational formats. The people that have made this charge against me are such constitutional experts that they issued a subpoena to the Supreme Court of the United States seeking copies of my briefs that I'd filed on behalf of President Trump. They got a letter back from the clerk of the court saying, maybe you didn't understand constitutional law. We're the Supreme Court of the United States. We're not subject to the subpoena power of the California bar. by the way, the briefs you're seeking are publicly available on our website. So this is the level of constitutional expertise that is claiming I didn't know what the Constitution says. So, but that's just one of the many matters. That one, we had the longest and most expensive bar disciplinary proceeding in history. It lasted over 10 weeks. We still don't have a ruling, although the judge's deadline for issuing a ruling is this coming week. March 27th is the deadline. I think it's telling that it's coming during Holy Week.
Yeah.
But I've also been involved. I used to say the exact number, 14 cases, actions against me or involving me, but I can't even give a number anymore because about a month ago, I got a notification of the U.S. Court of Appeals in Boston that a case against me had been dismissed. And I didn't even know there was a case against me pending up there. And then I did some research on who this fellow was that was the plaintiff in that case. And he'd filed a half a dozen suits naming me and others. But I'm unindicted co-conspirator number two in the Jack Smith criminal indictment against President Trump in the District of Columbia. And I'm indicted co-conspirator number three in the Fannie Willis soap opera pending going forward down in Fulton County, Georgia.
So, John, for people that don't know who you are or don't understand your story, give a little background. What was your relationship with President Trump? What was your role in the lead up of the end of the election and before the changeover of power?
Well, you know, the president came to know me because of my work on birthright citizenship. And of course, in his 2016 campaign, he made that an important plank in his campaign effort. And then I was highly critical of the appointment of Robert Mueller. I didn't think that appointment was legal. And I went on Mark Levin to say so for, you know, the television hour-long show. And President Trump liked what I said and invited me up to the Oval Office just to get a chance to meet. Just that was it. And then as we got into the election, I became part of an informal group on election integrity stuff. But after the election, he called me and asked me to represent him in the case that was heading to the U.S. Supreme Court. And that's how I really got involved. That was about the first week of December 2020. And I filed the motion to intervene in the Texas versus Pennsylvania original action. And then I filed a cert petition from three different cases in Pennsylvania where the court was just simply ignoring state law. And the importance of that is the federal constitution gives sole authority, plenary authority, to the state legislatures to direct the manner of choosing presidential electors. And when these Democrat elected officials start altering the rules on their own without any authority, they were acting unconstitutionally. And we presented those matters to the courts, and the courts uniformly, well, not uniformly, there were a couple that took them up in one way or another, but most of the courts just dismissed these cases on very technical standing grounds, or you waited too long to bring the case, or you should have brought it earlier. One challenge we brought, they said, you can't wait. You can't bring this until they actually violate the law on election day. And then when they violated the law on election day, we bring another suit, said, you can't wait till your guy loses to bring this suit. So this is the kind of nonsense we were dealing with in those court cases. Down in Georgia, for example, they filed an election challenge, very thorough, well-done election challenge, on December 4th. And by the end of the month, they still hadn't even gotten a judge appointed who could hear the case. So we filed a federal action challenging the failure to follow their own rules on getting an election challenge. But none of that mattered. The courts were not taking the cases up. And so we started exploring what kind of authority the legislature has. And it was my view and remains my view that if they don't follow the rules, you have an invalid election. And the legislature's power to direct the manner of choosing electors kicks back in. And I testified to that effect down in Georgia. That's one of the counts against me in Georgia that it's the count that just got thrown out. We're happy one of the counts got thrown out, but it was soliciting the legislature to violate their oath of office. And by upholding the Constitution, it was a rather bizarre claim. But I became, when I filed that motion to intervene on behalf of President Trump, in a Supreme Court case, you have to put your name and address and phone number and email address. And I became the recipient of, you know, just all sorts of information. People that had seen things that should not have happened. People, and some crazy stuff too. I mean, I became like a triage nurse trying to sort what was valid, what was not valid, what we could prove, what couldn't be proved in the time available to us. But it was an extraordinary amount of information demonstrated to me beyond doubt that the election was stolen in the key swing states, in the key Democrat-controlled cities in those key swing states, to be more precise, in Milwaukee and Green Bay, Wisconsin, for example. in Green Bay, Wisconsin, a hardline party Democrat activist from New York came into the office, took over the office, had a direct line into the computer system. We're now learning from forensic audits that he had access to be able to change votes in the system. This is what the system allows. But beyond that, just altering the rules, getting rid of bipartisan teams in Wisconsin that the law required from going into nursing homes. Why is that so important? Because people in nursing homes are particularly susceptible to undue influence. Well, the Secretary of State unilaterally got rid of that rule, claimed it was COVID, but you know, didn't stop the fish tank cleaner from going in. But what we saw in Wisconsin nursing homes is turnout rates went from historic average of 20-30% to nearly 100%, including in memory care wings, and thousands of the ballots are in the same handwriting. So the notion that there's no evidence of fraud, that one issue alone in Wisconsin is a couple hundred thousand ballots in a state where the margin was just over 20,000.
Isn't it true, John, that there hasn't been a single case, and I could be wrong, you know more about this than I am, that I do, the single case alleging election fraud that has actually been heard and adjudicated in a court in the United States? Weren't all of the cases just tossed by the judges without any presentation of evidence?
There were a couple that were tossed on motions for preliminary injunction with the court, because one of the elements for a preliminary injunction is a likelihood of success on the merits. So the court discussed the merits in the case and denied the preliminary injunction, which means there was a preliminary finding of not a likelihood of success on the merits. But the Supreme Court's been very clear that is not an adjudication on the merits. It's a tentative assessment initially before we get discovery, before we get all this other stuff.
Well, that's kind of my point. So and I'm glad you're being very precise, which I appreciate. So with that exception, there has not been an actual full adjudication, meaning a presentation of the evidence, weighing pros and cons, discovery, the way that most Americans think of as a trial, so to speak. There has not actually been a trial, not even one, on any of the issues regarding the allegations of election fraud 4 years ago. Is that accurate?
I think that's accurate. There are about 100 cases. And so the reason I'm hesitating just a bit, there may have been one or two on relatively minor issues. But I'll give you one example, a very important case out of Michigan called Costantino. This is one that they had thousands of pages of sworn affidavits of what's done illegally in the TCF Center in Detroit during the ballot counting. And then there was an affidavit by one of the election officials that said, no, they're all wrong. They don't know what they're talking about. The election was perfectly conducted, perfectly legally. So you got 1,000 affidavits on one side, 1,000 pages of affidavits, and this one guy on the other. The trial court credits the election official, saying, well, I find him more credible because he knows what he's talking about. He's the guy that was committing the illegality or supervising those that were committing the illegality. No opportunity to cross-examine this witness. The judge just accepted it on a motion to dismiss, where you're supposed to accept the pleadings by the plaintiffs as true and then only dismiss it if true and they still don't meet the legal standards. But this judge weighed evidence without holding an evidentiary hearing, without subjecting the government official to cross-examination. And the dissenting justices in the Wisconsin Supreme Court said, this is not how we're supposed to do this. You can't weigh evidence at a motion for summary judgment or a motion to dismiss. You've got to accept the evidence by the party that, you know, opposing the motion as true. And then, you know, and so these were the kind of things we dealt with throughout. People, you know, it was the most, well, there was a justice on the Michigan Supreme Court that during one of the oral arguments there, and we know this not because the oral argument was recorded and we can watch it, but because one of the dissenting justices had enough courage to put what happened in writing in a dissenting opinion. And this judge from the bench asked Trump's lawyer, I don't even want to listen to you. All you want to do is keep your king in power. You know, the most unbelievably unjudicious statement from a state Supreme Court justice. And yet, I mean, this is what we were dealing with. The level of dishonesty and corruption in the court's assessment of this thing was just stunning. And it continues to be.
Yeah. John, this is not just one court. This is what's so shocking. I understand New York completely biased. We're seeing now the results of a completely corrupt judicial system in the state of New York, where we have politically motivated civil lawsuits against Donald Trump because the criminal lawsuits failed by corrupt DAs and now corrupt judges that support these corrupt cases. But what's really disconcerting to me is that, as you said, there are over 100 cases filed in the last 4 years about election fraud, and they weren't all in the same court. These are courts all over the country in different states. Are you suggesting that there is not just a corrupt court or a corrupt judge, but there is widespread corruption throughout the country? In other words, politically motivated justices that will not hear cases?
Look, I think this thing called Trump derangement syndrome really needs to be diagnosed.
That's the correct psychiatric term. As a psychiatrist, yeah, I can endorse that.
I think we got to update the DSM, right? What is that?
Statistical Manual of Psychiatric Illnesses, correct.
Yeah. We ought to update that because this seems to be a real thing. It's elites against the people. I mean, it doesn't matter whether you're Democrat elite or you're Republican establishment elite. They all suffer from this Trump derangement syndrome, and they just can't see straight. And so one has to hope that it's not a broader corruption, that it's just a one-off given this visceral hatred of Donald Trump. But they spent years trying to caricature his statements and his actions, and then they come to believe the caricatures they've given. It's like, remember when Saturday Night Live did the skit on Sarah Palin, and they said, I can see Russia outside my kitchen window. And most Americans think that it was actually Sarah Palin that said that. I mean, most of these leftists and never Trump Republican rhinos, I think, really believe the crap that they've been putting out about President Trump, whether it's like the Georgia phone call, a good example. They continue to believe that he told Brad Raffensperger, the Secretary of State of Georgia, to go create 12,000 votes so he'd win the election. But the conversation was, our experts have identified 150,000 illegal votes. All you have to do is find 11,780 of them and I win. Completely different spin or interpretation than they're trying to put on it when you get to the truth. But they don't want to get to the truth. They've got a narrative, and anything that comes in that is contrary to the narrative, they've got to destroy, whether it's evidence like Liz Cheney apparently has done in the J6 committee when they had testimony and evidence that the president had in fact authorized the call up of National Guard troops to prevent any violence on January 6th. And that didn't fit the narrative that he did nothing. And so they destroyed the documentary evidence. They hid the investigations. You know, this is at the end of the Oppenheimer movie, somebody asks Robert Oppenheimer, what do you want? And he said, I just want people to start telling the truth. but it seems that this narrative is so pervasive and they are so vested in it that anybody that dares to tell the truth, that exposes the lie that the narrative is going to be targeted and destroyed, because they can't let anybody, particularly people with credibility, actually put the actual evidence out there because it destroys their narrative.
This episode is brought to you by Rogers Hood Apothecary.
Here are 7 signs you may have a parasite. My biggest issue, because I did have parasites, was teeth grinding, skin irritation, and unexplained digestive issues. The other indication that you could have a parasite is eating after 7 p.m. and craving sugar. My name is Kim. I'm the Worm Queen and the inventor of the Parify Kit. Let's go over it. Parify, it's your parasite cleanse. Systane, it's your candida and your bad bacteria cleanse. Metal Flush, it's your heavy metal detox. Cinnabon, it's your binder. The kit comes with instructions. We have a nut-free option. We ship worldwide. The Parify Kit is for ages 3 and up. Use IDM as your 10% discount code. Find it on rogersu.com.
Speaking of that narrative, John, and the truth, what is the truth behind the recommendation that you gave Donald Trump as it related to what you wanted Vice President Pence to do on January 6th?
The truth begins with, I was asked to do a memo laying out all the different scenarios that people were talking about. And one of those scenarios that others had been talking about had been floated in the press dating back early September in Atlantic or Time magazine or one of those places, that the vice president simply had the authority to decide which electoral votes to count and which not count. There's an open question on whether his authority to open and the presumed authority to count, because it shifts to the passive voice, includes the authority to judge which ones to open and count. And so that was one of the scenarios. But the scenario I actually recommended was to accede to requests that he'd received from more than 100 state legislators in the swing states who specifically told him our election was illegally conducted. We think it may have affected the outcome. We've been barred from coming back into special session to deal with that. We're now in regular session and we'd like a week or 10 days to try and get our hands around this and decide what to do. And if we determine that the illegality didn't have an effect on the outcome of the election, or we can't prove one way or the other what it was, we will send you a note and recertify Biden. And then my memo in big moat says, and in big bold letters says, and Biden wins. But if we're able to determine that the illegality affected enough votes in areas where we can now pretty well confirm that it was Trump that won, in order to vindicate the will of the voters, then we should send you the proper certification rather than the fraudulent one. And then Trump would win. So my advice was that he let this delay go on for a week or 10 days as the legislators had requested, where the authority is vested in the Constitution, in the body of the legislature, state legislatures. So that was it. But that
why is that considered such crazy advice? I don't understand. There are people you hear on CNN and elsewhere that think you're off your rocker making such a recommendation.
Well, you know, they don't know our history very well. There was an expert that I put that in quotation marks, that testified against me in the California bar proceeding that no reasonable constitutional attorney would have taken such a position, because never in our history has any vice president acted in accord with the view that he had the power to make judgments about the electoral votes. And that's just simply not true. 1796, John Adams did it. 1800, Thomas Jefferson did it. 1817, 1837, 1857. In 1876, Congress actually created a commission that considered disputed electoral votes for several months. So the notion that the Constitution prohibited any delay is kind of belied by that precedent. And then most recently, in 1960, Richard Nixon, he had three different slates of electors that had come in. Two of them certified by the governors, one for him, one for John Kennedy, and one, the Kennedy voters that met on the same day before they were certified, and he had that one before as well. And he decided on his own to count the third one, not the first two, rejecting, therefore, the first two. And so the notion that it's never been done, that the vice president has never exercised such authority, is flat out false. And I had, you know, six or seven examples in our history where that was done. The question is, why would we give, this was Pence's dear colleague letter, the morning of January 6th. I can't imagine our founders would give such authority to a single person. Well, we have we don't have any debates about the vice president's authority on the Electoral College. But we have lots of debates about the importance of having a single person head the executive, because that way the person is accountable and can act. The whole executive is built around a single person being the head of it. And, you know, the buck stops here, as Harry Truman famously said. The one thing we know about the Electoral College that the founders did not want to have is that Congress would have any role in it at all, because that would destroy separation of powers. That would make the president subservient to the Congress. It would turn us in from a separation of powers with three co-equal branches of government into a parliamentary system. And they did not want that. That's the one thing that's clear. And yet what we have in the Electoral Count Act and the amendments to the Electoral Count Act that were done last year is Congress asserting power on steroids that it does not have under the Constitution.
Now, Vice President Pence is not an attorney, so obviously he was getting legal advice from his attorney, whoever that is. Did you have a conversation with whoever Vice President Pence's attorney was?
I did. And when he first put the memo together, he acknowledged that this was a viable position in the scholarship. And then only later did they have to come around to say, oh, no, because Pence didn't want to do anything. If Pence didn't want to do anything, he should, because he was fearful that it would look like he was biased because he was also on the ticket, then he could have recused himself and another senator would have stepped up and assumed the position of the president of the Senate in an acting role. But no, they had determined, and, you know, one has to speculate why. You know, he was a loyal vice president to President Trump, but he's also much more of an establishment guy. And the establishment wing of the Republican Party cannot stand Trump. But more importantly, they can't stand the movement that Trump has become the leader of. And I remind people, this is not a movement that began with Trump. This is a movement that he saw and got ahead of. There was a marching band coming down Main Street called the Tea Party movement that was opposed to federal government just getting so expansive that they're bankrupting our grandkids and interfering in every aspect of our daily lives with no constitutional authority to do so. That was a movement that was well underway, and the Republicans in Congress hated it. They hated it in 2008 and 2010. They continued to hate it, and they hate it even more now that President Trump has become that movement's standard bearer. And why is that? Well, I mean, there are a lot of people that have never held a job in their lives except elected office, and they've all become multimillionaires. And you have to stand back and ask how that happens. It happens because there is trillions of dollars that run through Washington, D.C. and funneled into their various causes and family members and, you know, what have you. And they do not want to upset that apple cart. And they're going to keep milking it until the cow is dead. And, you know, we're on the precipice of that cow dying. I mean, you know, and there are still too many of them in Washington, D.C. that don't get it. Or while the ship is sinking, they're going to continue to steal the silver. I mean, it's just, this is what we're dealing with. And Trump seems to understand that. And certainly the movement that's behind him understands that in a way that those elites in Washington either are too stupid or too naive or just too invested in the corruption to want to see.
Wow. So there's something that is occurring on the right or the conservative side that is distinct from but equally dangerous with TDS or Trump derangement syndrome. You know, we call informed dissent media podcast, our moniker is the intersection of medicine or healthcare and politics. And you just gave us a great example of that intersection, which is Trump derangement syndrome and the Democrats or those who vote for them. Like, it's a mental illness. That's why they're so viscerally opposed to confronting election fraud in the case of Trump. But this is something that you just brought up, which I think is very important, that a lot of people who are on the right or conservative, certainly not Democrat or DNC or, you know, radical left supporting people, don't really understand or recognize to the extent that I wish that they would, which is this investment on the part of the Republicans, many Republicans, Republican politicians, in furthering the deep state, the aggrandizement of power, the centralization of power in the government, because it benefits them, even though it kills the host, which is the nation, which of course then lets everyone down, us, the citizens. And this is something that we also have to fight just as much as TDS.
I agree. And, you know, you can call it the administrative state, the deep state, the uniparty. I like that one. There's a party, an inside the beltway party, and you know, the rest of us, what the Democrats and the Republican establishment like to refer to as the deplorables or the flyover country. But that's real America. And that's where people have conversations over the dinner table, not, you know, about the basketball game at the local high school the night before, not about, you know, whether the omnibus trade bills should be passed or not. I mean, you know, and yet real Americans are coming to the realization that if we don't pay attention to that stuff that's going on in Washington, it has a dramatic impact on how we live our daily lives, because the federal government has so overreached its constitutional authority that it is getting interfering in things that are, you know, I can't get a straw at a restaurant that doesn't fall apart in your hands because it's made out of paper instead of plastic. You know, I can't. We're back to paper bags now. No, we got rid of paper bags because they were killing the rainforest, and we went to plastic bags. We got rid of the plastic bags because, you know, they were single use, although they were never single use for most people. You use them in your trash cans. Now you got to buy plastic bags for your trash cans that are 10 times, you know, longer lasting in the dump yards than the little plastic bags we use. And now you got to use these reusable ones, or people are getting sick with, you guys are doctors, getting sick with salmonella and other bacterial diseases. Now that is, or you can't get gas stoves in your house, or you got toilets that you got to flush four times to get everything down, which, you know, or electric cars that take more energy to produce the mileage you need. And that's before you even get into the terrible environmental consequences of making these batteries, or, you know, or they stop when it gets cold, or, you know, I mean, this there is a mindset of blindness to the folks on the left that too many Republicans are benefiting from financially, and they won't touch it. And it's so infuriating, because you're right. They're going to kill the host, take it down, and their gamble is that they won't be here to see that happen. But exactly. I'm sorry. How do you hand off such a thing to your grandkids and sleep at night? And this is why the Tea Party started. Yeah.
So, John, there's rumors that when President Trump wins in November, that he's going to ask you to be the next attorney general.
Yeah, the New York Times floated that, thinking how ludicrous that would be, and everybody will recognize we can't vote for Trump. And then the number of people that, you know, came out in support of that was astounding, even to the New York Times. Mm-hmm. I've not had any conversations on that score. In fact, President Trump and I are under court order not to talk to each other about anything dealing with election stuff. So, look, people have said, would you do what you did again? I said, when the president of the United States calls you to represent him, that's a thing you need to do. And if the president of the United States says, John, I need you in X position or Y position, our country's in danger and you've got the expertise needed to address X issue or Y issue, you know, you'd be foolish not to give serious thought to being able to say yes to that, because the country, the person who's been elected to lead the country, is asking you for your service. And you got to do that with courage and mettle, because what the left has done with this lawfare is trying to prevent anybody from stepping up. And, you know, I'm not making that stuff up. They've said so. The head of the 65 Project, which is filing these bar complaints against all the lawyers, he's basically said, I think I can get this directly quoted, our goal is not just to have them disbarred, but to make them so toxic in their firms and their communities that right-wing legal talent will never take on these kind of election challenges again.
Crazy.
And it doesn't matter, election challenges, or you're a parent at a school board meeting complaining about, you know, 50-year-old men exposing themselves in your girl's locker room, or defeating, you know, boys defeating them in the swim meet or the track meet, and you complain against that, and then the FBI comes to investigate you. Which lawyer is going to want to step up and take you on if it means it's going to destroy their career? I mean, I've spent over $1 million already defending my bar license, defending against the Georgia action, fulfilling my ethical obligation to my clients to protect their attorney-client privilege communications. And you know, luckily, I've got the ability and a national platform to be able to raise the kind of money to deal with that and the courage to stand up to it. But this is what we need.
Yep. So speaking of that, John, I can't imagine actually how stressful this must be, fighting on multiple fronts, fighting off these lawsuits, spending your own money, and doing this relatively alone. So you did set up a mechanism by which our listeners can help you. I met you, I can't remember now, maybe about a month or so ago at an event in Newport Beach here, and you shared this story, and you've got a site at GiveSendGo. So GiveSendGo is a non-woke organization where you can collect money. And givesendgo.com/Eastman, you can donate. I made a donation a month or so ago. And if you're listening to this, throw a tip in the jar. It will be very helpful to John. He needs to be able to continue to fight this. And we need him as the next attorney general. So it'll be helpful. He needs to win these cases. And so President Trump can appoint him as our next attorney general.
Jeff, thank you very much. And a couple of other reasons people should go there. One, it's a religious Christian site and people can send prayers. And we've had thousands of prayers come in, and my wife and I read them, and they're heartwarming. There's also an address at the top of the page where if people don't want to make an online donation, they can mail a check. But as importantly, we also use it as a blog. It's not a daily thing, but I provide, you know, maybe once a month or so, an update of what's going on so that people and links to articles that seem to understand rather than the propaganda media that we normally get. And so it's an informative site as well as a legal defense fund site.
So bring us up to speed. Where are you with all these lawsuits?
Well, so we expect to get a ruling out of the California Bar Court this coming week.
Okay. And just for our listeners that may be listening at a time delayed, we're recording this on Palm Sunday, and we'll be releasing this hopefully soon. So just to put that in context.
Good. So by Holy Week Wednesday is the deadline for the Bar Court to get the ruling out. And my family's been praying for over a year that this judge will see the straight to apply the law faithfully and recognize that the case should never have been brought in the first place. But if she rules adversely against me, that means that my license is immediately suspended while I pursue the appeals. We would ask for a stay of that, but hopefully we don't get to that. Second thing is that people have been watching and hearing about the soap opera and the Torrid Affair down in Fulton County, Georgia. Well, you know, I'm involved in that case as a defendant. And right now, the case is starting to move forward again under the watchful, though corrupt, eye of the district attorney, Fannie Willis. But the motion to disqualify her, the judge granted a request to take an interlocutory appeal. That means we're going to do an appeal now on that issue rather than having to wait till the end of the trial. And the appellate court has up to 45 days down there to decide whether to accept the appeal in the interim or not. And so that if that appeal goes forward, then things would slow down there a little bit. But if it doesn't, we'll be in trial probably by this summer. District Attorney Willis has asked for a trial date beginning August 4th, and she predicts it'll take 4 to 5 months. That's August, September, October, November. Oh, 4 months. Had nothing to do with the timing of the election, but I'm sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, great. Well, listen, Professor John Eastman, it's been an honor. Thank you for coming on Informed Dissent. If you're listening, please go to givesendgo.com/Eastman. Donate to John's legal fund. Send him a prayer. Send him a letter if you need to. And that way you can follow along on what's going on with his case. So thank you, John. Appreciate you coming on.
Jeffrey and Mark, thank you very much for having me, and keep up the good work. The more we have an informed citizenry, the more likely we are to be able to protect this great thing we've bequeathed by our founding fathers and mothers.
Most definitely. Thank you, John.
You've been listening to Informed Dissent with Dr. Jeff Barkey, board-certified primary care physician, and Dr. Mark McDonald, board-certified child, adolescent, and adult psychiatrist. Informed Dissent, the intersection of healthcare and politics.